I think you'll know yourself when you're no longer afraid. So maybe your question should be, how can I not be afraid? But you didn't ask that. That's a great question, and I think from time to time, regularly, daily, you should bow to it. And if you deeply revere and respect and bow to that source within you, I think it'll want to be a more regular part of your life. So find some way to bow to it. So the way to stay fluid, flexible through all the ups and downs and changes is to keep that question in the forefront. It's the classic, it's the central Vipassana question. What's this? What's now? What's happening? And so, but part of the trick is then you don't want to settle for any answer. Because as soon as you have an answer, it's already history. But you want to be ready to ask the question again, and then ready to ask it again. Great. Yes?
Yeah, a couple of questions that came up. One is similar to what you said. That was, who is the knower? What is it that is the thing you didn't know? And then another question, after writing, what is it now in this moment?
So which one of those two questions would you like to ask me? What is that inside of you which knows? The one that's asking the question. The sometimes people look for the answer in a thing, as an object, but perhaps the answer is found as a functioning within you, and so it has to be found in your functioning. And the one who asks the question, the one who wants to know the answer, in the very process of wanting to know, that functioning is the one that knows. Yes, please.
Question that comes to us, why is it all so messy and there be simplicity?
Why is what messy?
Why is life, not mine in particular, why is life messy and can it ever be simple?
It can be both. And that's the only hope, if it can be simultaneously what it is. And within that, we can find the simplicity. And simplicity, the only place to look for simplicity is in yourself. It's to look for it externally is not going to be very helpful for you. But it's possible to find simplicity within you and to rest in that simplicity, to let that simplicity be that which relates to the world around you. Yes?
For the last 25 years of my life, I've lived with a chronic illness and successfully maintained my health to a reasonable point. Over the last 2 years, I've made significant changes to simplify my life and cut out a lot of stress and in an effort to start taking care of myself better. But to this day, a question that comes up all the time in my meditative and non-meditative mind is why I don't prioritize my health more. I'm always living on the edge and doing just barely what I need to do to be healthy, but everything else in my life is always prioritized over my true health. Everyone and everything else. And it's
what's more important for you than your health?
Anything. Cleaning the house, helping a friend, answering all of my email, working. I find, like I said, I maintain a certain level of health and appearance, and I take care of myself, but it's just enough to get by. I'm always sliding. Everything else, I'll put in 150% effort.
Mm-hmm. I think it's still a good question that I asked you, and that is to get really quiet and still and go someplace where you can be deeply reflective and go on retreat or go for a walk on the beach or in the woods or spend a day alone or do something that really gets you kind of quiet and away from the normal pulls and pulls of life, away from email, for example, or whatever. And ask yourself that question, what is it that is profoundly and deeply more important for you than your health? Because the health, it might be that the health itself is not particularly interesting thing to base your life on. And so you're not inspired to base your life on the issues of health. But to base it on email and all the kind of things you talked about, which seems kind of superficial, is also not going to be very satisfying in the long term. But if you can find something which has greater integrity and sincerity importance for you than even the health, and then you organize your life around that, it might be that it'll be easier to take care of the health issues then, if you find that deeper thing.
I totally see exactly what you're saying, and over the last 2 years, what you're suggesting is what I've done to an unbelievable extent, but I'm still there. I spend hours alone. I have much time to myself, contemplating, and it's, you know, that question is still very much in the forefront of my life.
Uh-huh. And sometimes when we get pulled off into kind of seemingly superficial pursuits and things which aren't really connected to our deeper wishes and deeper sense of importance, it can be fruitful to look at what is the function of those distractions. Because sometimes we very easily kind of chase after those things, and it's really a lazy way of trying to avoid something much more profound, something maybe we've been frightened to look at. And so sometimes you need to question, look at the distractions and those superficial activities, and see what is their function. Are they a kind of protection from something that you'd rather not look at? Yes.
Why do I feel like I need to impress you by asking a really good question?
Tell me.
I guess I want you to think I'm smart, I guess.
Tell me more. Why would that be important?
I don't know. I guess just being judged positively is like a really important thing to me, and it sort of gets in the way of like a lot of my thinking, a lot of my just awareness of everything that's going on.
And if you were judged positively, well, what would that do for you? Why is that a good thing to have happen? You have no sense of what that would do for you?
I guess it would just make me happy that other people saw me help. Mm-hmm. And like I see there's like a big wound in that, but I can never get past it.
Yeah, you might not get past it until you find how to be happy for yourself, by yourself.
Yeah.
And then the happiness that comes from other people's judgments will just wither away. So try to find your own happiness. Yes, please.
The question boils down to why does achieving financial welfare
at war with what my heart wants to do? I don't think I have an answer. It's a very good question, but it's almost as if I need to have more information. My gut kind of response, which might not address you at all because I don't know enough of what's going on, my gut response is it doesn't have to. Just follow your heart. A lot of people are really afraid to follow their heart because they feel they need financial security. And there's certainly a place, very important place in life for financial security. But there's also a beautiful place for some people to let go of those concerns entirely and just follow the path of their heart. And if there weren't people who did that, the world would be a much poorer place. We have a lot of very inspiring examples of people who chose their heart over their financial security and who lived life of great poverty, sometimes even homeless. But they transform our world in very, very dramatic ways. Yes. Do you know what where your heart wants to go? I would do whatever I could to continue that learning process. Because the more clearly you know what the heart wants, the easier it'll be to follow it. To do whatever you can to read your heart. And take some time in your life to very intentionally put aside every possible distraction that might keep you from knowing what the heart wants. Go on retreat, or go 40 days in the desert, or you know, something. There's a whole process of going deeper and deeper into the heart, and it's a beautiful thing to listen deeply to what really wants to be expressed, what really wants to be done. Yeah.
Mine was, where did I lose my heart?
You didn't. How do you feel about losing it? And I would suggest that in the grieving that you have, that's where you find your heart again. So let the grief be there. Yes.
My question is, how do I change a belief?
Maybe you need to become more aware, more of the suffering that comes from holding that belief. And you won't really change the belief until you fully, completely understand the suffering that is inherent in having it. I tend to think that way myself. I'm not sure if it's true, but I tend to think that way. If you see it clearly enough, you see the suffering and see the... Also, it can be helpful to go underneath the belief and see what is the function of the belief. What's the belief trying to do for you? And it could be that once you understand what the belief is trying to do for you, then you'll find a more useful way of satisfying that need. Most beliefs are trying to fill a need. And if you can find the underlying need, and then you can maybe replace it with something more useful than the belief you have. Yeah, Bonnie.
As you know, I've got your message in the last 2 weeks to important relatives of the so the question that is me now is, how do I stay present in my grief? I'm learning from it.
I don't know. I think that you need to give yourself very clearly defined and protected time each day to be by yourself or to be with particular people who can share that grief with you. So you have grieving time, sacred time in which you can grieve and bring out the photographs and sit with them and make sure that you give yourself that time. I think if you give yourself the time, probably you'll know what to do. know how to let go. If you've learned that one, you'll be prepared for death. Everything else is just icing. Is that a question?
Why didn't I come up with
it? I can't answer that question for you. The only thing I can do is to reassure you that it's not necessary to have a question. That's not how some people kind of minds work or how they approach life or their spiritual life. They don't have a question. It doesn't kind of compute for them. So that's one, you know. There could be other reasons why you don't have a question. It could be that you're afraid of having a question. You think you're afraid? Yeah, so I don't know. Yes, please.
Well, I am afraid, so the question is, how can I have the courage or not be afraid to see the love and connection that I think is there, that I think is there?
How can I have the courage to see the love and connection that you think is there? Well, it's possible that your fear itself is the bridge. And it's a bridge in two directions. When you see that you're afraid, you use your fear as a bridge to encourage you to take risks. And you have to take some risks. And I would look for different ways, and safe ways at first, maybe take risks. That's possible. So it's a bridge in that direction, outwards. But the fear is also a bridge inwards. And follow the fear backwards. Really be present for your fear. Get to know the fear really well. Sit in the middle of your fear. Follow it inwards. And see how deep you can go. Sit in the middle of the greatest fear you have. And see what happens when you're deep in your fear. Trace the fear back. Because if you trace the fear back far enough, you'll find the very sense of connect, that you'll find the love and the connection that you're hoping to have. The source of your fear is that tender intimacy, intimate place of love and connection, if you trace it back. For you too. Yes. What is love? Why do you ask the question?
Thank you.
What's real? Is that a different question? So the first question is, what is love? And now the question is, what is real? What if you assume that for both questions, you actually already know? The answer. There's no one outside of you, no one outside there in the world, me or anyone else, who actually has a better sense than what you already know for yourself. No one else has tapped into some deep truth, some deep, deep realization. It's different than what you already know for yourself.
I don't feel like I'm.
That's a different question. But perhaps if you have more confidence that you already know, it'll be easier to act from it. Because you've lacked confidence. But perhaps if you have more confidence that you actually know what love is, maybe you can't explain it to anyone else, but in maybe an intuitive way, you know already. And there's no one outside of you who has a better answer. So you might as well have confidence in your own, because the people who have more confidence in their own answers they're not tapped into anything deeper than you are, even though they might advertise it that way. Yeah, have more confidence and then you'll live from it more easily. Yes. How can I have more ease in living my life? If you had more ease in living your life, what would that do for you?
It would make me feel less frazzled and feel calmer.
And if you could feel less frazzled and feel calmer, what would that do for you? Make you happier. Less stressed. Do you know what makes you happy?
Yes.
What?
Doing service, being out in nature. When I do that, I feel totally happy. But when I'm living life that I have to work, I feel like everything is going well in my life and how to change to the better, but I feel totally un-at ease.
You know, I don't know if this is your situation, but a lot of people who come to spiritual practice, like meditation practice, are looking to add a certain kind of calmness or ease or enlightenment or something that somehow will be like the lubricant. They'll make the rest of their life work just fine. And realistically, what we need to do is sometimes change our life, change our behavior, so that we can do the kind of things that brings us more happiness, and not just simply kind of just try to have everything. So you might spend some time thinking very deeply about your priorities and how you really want to spend your life. And think perhaps a little bit about what it'd be like. Imagine yourself on your deathbed in 40, 50 years or however long, and think back to who you are right now. And what do you wish you would do in the intervening times? Would you how would you like to have, on your deathbed, how would you like to have thought about the remaining years that you have left? What are the important activities? What are the important things you'd like to do? And it's possible that some of the choices you're making now lose really their importance in the perspective of being on your deathbed. And some of the things you don't give yourself enough time to do now, you would be eager to do if you knew this was your last day, or if you knew that the context of it was, you know, what's really important, you know, looking back over a lifetime. Yes?
Is there a way for me to ask questions without feeling so burdened and disillusioned by the questioning process?
Why have you gotten disillusioned by it?
I was a philosophy major, that was probably the first mistake.
Yeah. So so the way to perhaps to overcome your disillusionment with questioning is to understand that the answers are not found in the answers. It's not a matter of answering those questions, but rather using those questions, having questions, and realizing the very questioning process itself is part of the awe. It's part of the wonder. And maybe you don't have to be maybe you don't have to answer your questions as much as have the questions be the springboard to the mystery, to the awe. Maybe your answers got in the way. When I was 14, I lived in a boarding school in Switzerland. And I chose this boarding school because it was really beautiful, high up in the Alps, and next to ski resorts, and beautiful place. And so I spent the months there, kind of beautiful, kind of alpine hillside, mountainside, and beautiful views of the skies and snow-covered mountains and the valley below. And it was springtime when I was there, beautiful place. I was 14, and I remember walking down the road one day with my fellow school friend and looking up at the sky and asking the question, something like, you know, what's the meaning of life? Why am I here? Why are we here? And my friend, who was 17, looked at me with some scorn and said, don't be so silly. And I just closed right up. Okay, I can't ask those questions anymore. That was, you know. And it took me a good number of years before that sense of awe and appreciation, kind of open questioning of the world, arose in me again. Because I've been taught that it was silly to have it. And I can imagine a philosophy student getting lost in the answers. The answers are not the point.
Job. And also spiritual sources of whom I knew. And then it went, it settled a little more, and it was just too rich.
Thank you, thank you, Nancy. That was very nice. Yes.
I tend to be struggling a little bit as I approach 40, and I think it's a combination of things. Perhaps one thing being feeling like I wasted some years in my 30s, and also noticing that tending to view my life as these eras. I have my 20s and my 30s. And I'm approaching my 40s, and well, that's only 20 years from when I become 60. And actually, I think mindfulness has helped me to try to, you know, to be more in the present, and actually I feel happier that way. But I just wondered if you have any suggestions on just how to view this whole lifespan and this progression.
I spent a year of my life, at least a year of my life, maybe more. It was kind of an informal thing I kind of did. Reflecting each day, most days, reflecting on how would I live this day if I had only one day left? If I knew I was going to die that evening, for example, or the next morning. And that was very helpful for me, that process of seeing what kind of it whittled away a lot of the superficial things that I was interested in doing. And so you think you have, you're about to 40, right? You think you have, what kind of arrogance is that? Thinking you have another 20 or 30 or 40 years. Jesus. You don't know you have that much time. Gee. You're willing to admit that in front of all these people? I think that how you're wasting your time is having these kinds of concerns, worried about being 40. Throw yourself into your life. Yes?
We talked about fear, and then there's the additional layer of fear, which is fear that one will always have the same fear. And fear of becoming identified with a particular fear.
Uh-huh. What to do about the fear of always having the same fear? What to do about that? Maybe you need to change your perspective on this problem. And rather than seeing the fear of always having this fear as a problem, look at this very same thing you're doing and see how it could help you out. Where does having a fear of having the same fear always, how can it give you strength to change who you are? So rather than assuming that it's a problem, assume that it's actually going to help you. If you just, it can actually help you get you motivated. Try, yeah. Change your view of it. See it as your friend and your ally. And it's really going to change you. It's really going to. You have to look at it so it motivates you to be changed. If you're not motivated, nothing's going to help you. But use that fear as your motivator. Yes, please.
on this little story. I go running with a friend of mine, and we start to run laughing. By mile two, I'm upset about something that we talked about in life. And so my question is kind of like, well, how do I get beyond mile two? And when I'm sitting here meditating, I get this lump in my throat. It's like, well, how do I get past this lump in my throat to even ask the real question? I just feel like I get, you know, that I do fine on the surface, but when I get to a certain level, I'm just stuck.
Uh-huh. Well, what comes for me is that you should tell the truth. Take refuge in the truth. Speak the truth. If you speak the truth, you won't be stuck. You want to say more, or that's enough? But I'm quite serious. I think that if many of the ways we're stuck would not stay that way if we really learned how to speak the truth. And out loud even. But certainly to ourselves, but even out loud. If we're in relationships where things are difficult, to speak the difficulty. Because, and it's a whole art, a whole skill to be learned about learning how to be really honest with what's really going on. And being honest in such a way that, and truthful, that it's not blaming anyone or criticizing, but just, you know, stating what's actually happening now in the present moment. It's very, very powerful. It's more powerful than... Stating the truth is more powerful than acid. You probably wondered where that came from. Yes.
Yeah, I just occurred to me a comment, maybe it's a question or comment. A couple of people previously talked about following the heart, how to know if the heart is believing and so forth. It occurs to me that it's a really, really tricky question, because if you were to ask, for example, a fundamentalist Christian, you know, where they're coming from, they say from the heart, or fundamentalist Muslim, who perhaps feels he should be flying up some planes and so forth. So it gets really involved. I think it's a lot to do with programming. So distinguishing what maybe our real destiny is from our programming, I think, is very tricky.
It might be impossible to distinguish the two.
My thought is that if we were able to totally let go, I think that's the key, and become who we really would become who we really are. And you might get into a space of being no one. And if you were in a space of no one, you might become everyone. Does that make sense?
Well, there's a very famous quote in our circles, which is spoken a lot, that says, wisdom teaches me that I'm nothing, and love teaches me that I'm everything. And in between is where my life flows. So thank you very much. Oh yes. Oh, we've
got an announcement about Janet Peterson.
Oh yes, thank you. Sorry, we didn't do announcements before. A few announcements. One is that Jan Peterson, who's many of you know, she's been part of our sangha for many years. Her son died unexpectedly Thursday night, 29-year-old son, and she is right currently kind of in mourning, and will probably be for a few days, you know, for days, for a lifetime. But if there are people here who know her, she would actually appreciate people coming over to visit her during for the next week or so, maybe bringing a meal over for her, or just sitting with her, meditating with her, going for. She can't really walk very much because she has a broken foot, but just, you know, small things, go shopping for her. And I think her phone number is in the directory. I think I have it here also if you'd like me to give it to you. Or anyway, this would be, if you know Jan, this would be a good time to help her out. The funeral is going to be tomorrow up in Colma. And are there any other announcements which are really important, which should be said? Yes?
Yes, last week we announced.